KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is KAEB 91.9 on your FM dial. Your one-stop shop in Sandpoint from classic oldies to banging new modern.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
A Kodiak commercial fisherman flew to Washington, D.C. to testify about the impacts of illegal fishing to a U.S. Senate subcommittee. KMXT's Brian Venwa talked to the fisherman as well as Senator Dan Sullivan about why it's important to keep their eyes on other countries' fisheries.
Gabriel Prout and his family have sailed the Silver Spray, a Kodiak-based commercial fishing boat, for about 20 years. But on June 12th, he traded his extra tufts and fishing gear for a suit to represent Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, a fisherman association.
So I think this is just kind of my way of doing my part. And when Senator Sullivan's office calls you and says, hey, we'd like you to testify on this issue, it's hard to turn down.
He spoke to the Senate Subcommittee on Coast Guard, Maritime, and Fisheries.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear today to discuss the devastating impact of IUU, illegal, unreported, and unregulated crab fishing, and unfair Russian and Chinese trade practices on American crab fishermen and coastal communities.
Prout presented a few ideas to the subcommittee he thinks could help, like better monitoring seafood imports and mandating labels for countries of origin. He also accused other countries of having more subsidies for fishermen than the U.S. does and asked for programs to help fishermen facing rising costs.
And create low-interest loans to help crabbers and fishing fleets modernize gear and remain competitive throughout the world. Prioritize support for small, independent, family-owned fishing operations like those that I represent.
Pratt says these kinds of programs can help level the playing ground when competing in international markets against producers like China, who use slave labor and other cost-cutting measures to drive down seafood prices.
I mean, if you have a product coming into the country that's cheaper, more readily available, it's really hard to compete with that. So that's one of the big issues about IUU is that it forces downward pressure on prices and affects, you know, small and local fishing families.
Sullivan says taking on illegal fishing is high on his priorities list and could see some bipartisan support for the issue.
This brings together people who care about fisheries, human trafficking, slave labor, sustainable oceans, the environment, national security. It's a combination of many of those issues.
Earlier this year, President Donald Trump signed an executive order titled Restoring American Seafood Competitiveness, which pushes federal officials to consider appropriate responses to IUU fishing. Sullivan floated the idea of working with allied countries to monitor fishing fleets in international waters, particularly boats from China.
You know, unfortunately, some of our partners and allies in Africa and South America, they don't have very big coast guards. They have very little navies. They're super vulnerable to this kind of intimidation and gray fleet activity by the Chinese fleet. But that's not the same with us in Japan and some of our European allies.
Sullivan introduced a bill called the Fish Act, or Fighting Foreign Illegal Seafood Harvest Act, last month. The bill has multiple goals in targeting IUU fishing, including encouraging working with partner countries to inspect suspicious boats and establishing a blacklist of fishermen and boats that are caught fishing illegally. He says he hopes to include some of the provisions in a future defense bill. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Amid an outcry from tribes and subsistence advocates, the federal council that manages the Bering Sea pollock fishery says it is still undecided on when it might take action to potentially restrict the amount of chum salmon that trawlers can scoop up as bycatch. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council says funding and scheduling concerns could delay final action on chum bycatch until April 2026. The potential delay has been criticized by those who say chum salmon crashes across western Alaska, especially on the Yukon River, require swift action. The Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association advocates for dozens of communities now in their sixth year of near-total salmon fishing closures. The group's executive director, Serena Alstrom, called in to the council's recent meeting in Oregon on June 10th to stress the importance of sticking to the original December timeline.
The people who call the Yukon River region home simply cannot afford the luxury of a postponement. Their livelihoods, their traditions, and their very future hinge upon timely and effective interventions.
Earlier this year, the council heard 3 days of testimony on chum bycatch from voices across western Alaska, as well as from representatives of the multi-billion-dollar pollock industry. At that February meeting, it took a step closer to final action on the controversial bycatch issue by laying out a complex set of potential options, ranging from taking no action to implementing a hard cap on the number of chum taken as bycatch in the Bering Sea. But the timeline for the final decision on chum has now been thrown into question. The council says there's simply not enough time to address all of the items on its agenda for its next meeting, scheduled for the beginning of December in Anchorage. One proposal by the council is to make space for the chum hearing by moving other items that are considered must-do items to a virtual meeting later in December, but that plan runs up against other scheduling conflicts. This also comes at a time of funding uncertainty at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the agency that distributes federal funding to the council. As of June 9th, the council said it had received less than half of its annual grant funding for 2025, despite being three-quarters of the way through its fiscal year. Council Chair Angel Drobnica says the council intends to schedule final action on chum bycatch as soon as possible, but that a lot of question marks remain.
Obviously, there are a lot of compounding issues that we're facing right now. Currently, you know, as others have stated, while we're very hopeful that we'll receive our next grant, we do not have money to even host an October virtual meeting.
Drobnica says the council will likely make a decision about the timing of a chum bycatch hearing in the coming weeks. Whether or not the council moves to delay the decision, it isn't clear which option it may choose for managing chum salmon bycatch. The council contends that the chum bycatch predominantly consists of Russian and Asian hatchery fish, and that roughly 17% of those chums on average over the last decade were from stocks bound for western Alaska rivers. At the same time, the volume of chum bycatch recorded in the pollock fishery has dropped significantly in recent years, from a high of more than 500,000 fish in 2021 to just over 35,000 in 2024. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Salmon have returned to the Kuskokwim, which for many means it's time to pukuk or clear out their freezers. Last week, a Kuskokwim River environmental advocacy group hosted a return of the salmon celebration. As KYUK's Samantha Watson reports, the event was about bridging environmental advocacy with excitement for the start of the fishing season.
Did you bring your ulu?
Oh,
it's gutted?
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing fish. In Lions Club Park in Bethel, Melanie Taikupa Brown leans over a salmon, gutting it with care. The Kuskokwim River it once swam in flows behind her. Soon, the salmon will be grilled in the pop-up park barbecue as a small crowd gathers for the community meal of fish and hot dogs. Posters for the event invited community members to cook their freezers, which, Brown says, is a way of cleaning out reserves of last year's salmon to make room for new catches. The return of the salmon celebration is put on by the grassroots organization Mother Kuskokwim, a group formed in opposition to the proposed Donlin Gold Mine project's environmental impacts. Brown works as the outreach director for Salmon State, an advocacy organization promoting policies that protect wild salmon habitats across Alaska that's partnered with Mother Kuskokwim.
Unfortunately, there are some threats that exist to the continuation of salmon returning that are upstream threats from potential mining activity. And then also there's some things happening in the ocean that are keeping king salmon and chum salmon from returning home.
The decline in salmon populations along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers has been attributed to changes in climate, including warmer ocean temperatures. This year marks the sixth consecutive year of salmon fishing closures on the Yukon River. On the Kuskokwim, salmon fishing is still open, but environmental advocacy groups like Mother Kuskokwim say the river still faces human-related threats, including bycatch from large-scale fishing on the Bering Sea. The proposed Donlin Gold Mine upriver has been the center of regional controversy. One focus point is the potential environmental impact were the tailings dam holding the mine's hazardous waste to fail. In 2022, YK Delta community opposition spurred the creation of Mother Kuskokwim and its mission of protecting the river and its surrounding land areas from the proposed mine.
This essential food source that really focuses the cultural lifeways of the people is being disrupted. And so this is meant to be a celebration, but also kind of a call to action for people to really come together around their love of salmon.
After they fill their plates with fresh salmon and other potluck dishes, the small crowd settles into picnic tables and folding chairs for a June afternoon of live music. They'll also be entered in a raffle for a 150-foot fishing net and other prizes lined up by Mother Kuskokwim. The event is a mix of community jubilee and a call to protect the salmon they're celebrating. Here's musician Mike McIntyre.
We have a really valuable resource here, a very valuable resource for all of us to eat while we go out there and try to live with this. Just to have a mine that is threatening our people, our way of life, it makes you want to fight.
As people fill up on fresh and cooked salmon, the river flows past Lions Club Park. Birds and small boats punctuate its vast expanse. In June, it's a nod to what is to come. Empty freezers now ready to fill up during the summer season ahead on the Kuskokwim. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The rest of the story. Once upon a time, there was a kingdom without a king, or so it seemed, because secreted in the ancient monasteries of Spain, hidden among the carefully guarded records and deeds and documents, was proof of an heir to a distant throne. His name was James, and according to the official documents, James descended from royal blood, possessed many knighted titles and heroic designations, and oh yes, he had a kingdom, a faraway land of his very own. Now, it was not a particularly large kingdom, nor was it richly populated. In fact, James' subjects were comprised merely of simple folk who had wandered there and settled there. But it was James' kingdom nevertheless, so one day he set out to claim it. Spain's own King Alfonso certified James' lineage, and therefore his royal entitlement. So when those who had settled the land protested that they had no king, Spain hurried to James' defense. To maintain order, Spain established diplomatic relations with James' kingdom, promised to send its army for protection if James declared it necessary. So promptly and by the authority and goodwill of Spain herself, James was secure in his royal crown. He reigned for 5 glorious years, during which his wealth increased to astronomical proportions. To his queen was born a son and a daughter, a prince and a princess. And it seemed for a while, at least, that the land would never again be without a ruler. But then James' kingdom fell to revolution, to political intrigue in the royal court. No, it was discovered that James' documented royalty was false, and not only false, but forged. James himself, seeking power, had cleverly, surreptitiously gained access to the official records, had inserted counterfeit documents, and had carefully altered those which were genuine. So James was not of royal blood after all, nor was he in any way entitled to the land of which he had crowned himself king. In fact, James, personally, was not even of Spanish descent. He was simply an American who had created for himself a noble ancestry, who had commissioned a tailor to provide him with a wardrobe befitting a nobleman, who had mastered the Spanish language and, moreover, a classical Spanish dialect. He had grown his sideburns to an appropriate length and, in every other way imaginable, had perfected through painstaking study the imaginary character he became. An American named James Addison Rivas, terribly clever, if not quite clever enough. So the king lost his kingdom, but in the end, America gained from his loss. Because you see, it had been through the technicality of a Spanish-American treaty that James had attempted to swindle his own native country out of her rightful territory, little over a century ago, really. And the 11 million acres of which James had been temporarily, actually, legally king, the land which really was a kingdom, if only for one brief, shining moment, was Arizona. Now, you know the rest of the story.
You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Thunderstorms Thursday afternoon started a dozen new fires in the interior, including a wildfire in the Gilmore Trail neighborhood northeast of Fairbanks that triggered an evacuation. The Fairbanks North Star Borough Notification System issued other evacuation preparation warnings during the night. It is the biggest ones that are pulling on the resources of the Federal Alaska Fire Service and the State Alaska Division of Forestry. Sam Harrell, Information Officer for Forestry, says now the equipment and people are being prioritized to protect life and property among the emerging incidents.
Every fire wants every resource you have, but we only have so many airplanes, so many firefighters, and so much ground to move everything around.
For example, the Gilmore Creek Trail on the northeast side of Fairbanks received a lot of resources.
The Gilmore Trail was a very important fire because of the proximity to all the folks that live on that hillside up there.
Still burning today are the Bear Creek Fire near Healy, which started near the Parks Highway at mile 262. Dog teams, multiple cabins, and structures were within 3 miles of the fire last night. Further up the parks is a larger fire on the hillside near the Bonanza Creek area at milepost 332. Last night, it was 350 acres and burning in continuous black spruce and hardwoods. The nearby Skinny Dick's Lodge is being used for equipment staging. That could mean travelers coming to Fairbanks for Solstice weekend should watch for emergency vehicles, fire crews, and heavy equipment in the area. Governor Mike Dunleavy has signed a bill expanding the exemptions that allow some Alaskans who are absent from the state to receive permanent fund dividends, the Alaska Beacon reports. Representative Jeremy Bynum, a Republican from Ketchikan, sponsored the bill, one of four that became law last week. He said he was pleased to see it signed into law. It was the first bill from the House's Republican Minority Caucus to become law this year. The governor did not hold a signing ceremony, and the governor's office did not issue a statement about the signing of that bill or three others that he signed last week. Under the law, Alaskans who are absent from the state while undergoing training for the U.S. Merchant Marine will not have that absence counted against them when considering eligibility for the permanent fund dividend. Dunleavy also allowed Senate Bill 80 and Senate Bill 137 to become law without his signature. Those bills renew some of the state's professional licensing boards and the state parole board. He also signed Senate Bill 152, which names the airport in Ruby after a longtime local pilot. This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Although Alaska is the land of 100,000 glaciers, only 700 of them have names. Those are featured in a new book by a Homer writer called the Alaska Glacier Dictionary. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, it's more than a reference book. It's full of stories.
In the course of her job as a journalist, Naomi Clouda stashed notes on Alaska glaciers into back drawer folders. But one day, they took on a life of their own.
Every glacier has a story, and no two are alike. They're very individual.
Yet part of everyday life, more than we might realize, like when you turn on the tap in Anchorage to drink glacial meltwater, or eat giant vegetables from the Matsu, raised in rich glacial silt.
Remember, glaciers were roads, too. They were places that were used by people. They were not just isolated outposts. Like the Valdez Glacier was lived on, tented on, slept on, carted all kinds of things over it to get over to the Copper River area in the Gold Rush era.
Clouda says her glacier dictionary is for travelers and armchair adventurers alike to give them quick access to a glacier's vital stats and nuggets of history.
There's no one compilation that gives you all of the information that this glacier dictionary does. And so it's sort of a baseline.
In this time of change, having that in one handy resource is very valuable.
Rick Toman is one of Alaska's foremost Arctic climate specialists. He says information about glaciers is scattered across maps and numerous studies.
But this is the kind of compilation of disparate material that its value will grow in the coming decades when some of this information will be even harder to acquire and some of those glaciers will be no more.
At least one glacier has disappeared since Clouda started work on her book. Toman is glad that Clouda has included the indigenous names for glaciers because they offer clues to a glacier's past.
Here in the interior, there's names that sure sound like they refer to times when the glaciers were much more advanced than they are in the historic period.
There are some really beautiful Alaska Native designations on glaciers. They'll be very descriptive.
Like Kidaz Kuni, the Denaina name for a glacier on Mount Spur.
And it means one that is burning inside. Now, picture this glacier is on Mount Spur. So in local memory, in indigenous memory, they would have known about the times that Mount Spur had erupted.
Clauda also says the names of Alaska glaciers tell the story of colonialism. When geologists from the U.S. Geological Survey mapped and named glaciers, they often supplanted indigenous names or failed to acknowledge the contributions of Alaska natives, like the Athabascan hunting party led by Chief Sesui, who came to the rescue of some explorers after a bear raided their cache. After killing the bear, Chief Sesui followed its tracks, found the men who were lost and on the verge of starvation. But when it came to naming a glacier on the north side of Mount Foraker, it was the Army lieutenant who led the expedition, Joseph Heron, who was remembered with the name Heron Glacier, not Chief Sesui.
So these glaciers are part of our lives, and to tell the story of glaciers is to tell a human story.
That's why Clauda says the name of the glacier is literally the tip of the iceberg. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
This is Alaska Public Media.
It's a beautiful morning.
Good morning, everybody out here in Southwest Alaska. It is another beautiful one. No wind to speak of. And it looks like it might rain. Looks like it did rain, but it's not raining now. Another typical day, isn't it? Just that's paradise. It's like the other day, and I was at a stop sign. I had to wait for three cars to go by before I could go. That's the first time in 23 years. That's paradise. Talking to a friend of mine yesterday, right, when I was done talking to all you, you probably heard the phone ring. Oh, yeah. So that was a friend of mine. I haven't, he lived across the street from me, well, in the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. And like we were best friends. So it was great talking to him. Brought a lot of stuff back, you know, back in those mid-teenage days. Oh, boy, what a time. Anyway, I'll just move on here, little Hank Williams with Your Cheating Heart. After that, Tracy Byrd with The First Step, and then Billy Crash Craddock with Rub It In. Yeah, I'm thinking again about you. Keeping in touch with old people, and I'm an old person. We're all old people now I grew up with, but keeping in touch with them. The kids I went to high school with and stuff, there's about four or five of us. We stayed in touch the whole time. And anyway, that's pretty special. it's just about as special as me sitting here talking to all you guys. Like, every one of you out there is my best friend and my brother and my sister, because that's the way I feel. It's beautiful to be here in paradise. Here's Hank.
Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come the whole night through. Your cheating heart will tell on you. When tears come down like falling rain, you'll toss around and call my name. You'll walk the floor the way I do. Your cheating heart will tell on you. Find someday and crave the love you threw away. The time will come when you'll be blue. Your cheating heart will tell on you. When tears come down like falling rain, you'll toss around and call my name. You'll walk the floor the way I do. Your cheating heart will tell on you. Then we'll talk.
Lie beside me on the sand. Put some lotion in your hand. Come on and make me feel nice. Then kiss me once or twice. Say you love me again. Then rub it in, rub it in. Rub it in. A little bit on my left shoulder.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Put a little bit right here.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Turn your radio on and find a slow grooving song. Baby, whisper in my ear. Say the things I wanna hear. Make me know your love is strong. And rub it in, rub it in.
Yeah, the Oak Ridge Boys, Oak Ridge Mountain Boys, that is, coming right up with Y'all Come Back Now, you hear? No, Y'all Come Back Saloon. After that, Travis Tritt with Help Me Hold On, then Red Foley with Our Lady of Fatima. That's a good one. What happened in 1917, there was an apparition of Our Lady, and it was witnessed by 70,000 people. 70,000 people witnessed this thing, the sun like danced in the sky. Well, of course the sun didn't dance in the sky. It was like a hallucination. Well, hallucinations are individual for each person. The fact that 70,000 people saw the hallucination, the same hallucination, that in itself was a miracle. Anyway, it's I'm Catholic, so for me it's a big one. Anyway, here's Oak Ridge Boys with Y'all Come Back Saloon.
She played tambourine with a silver jingle, and she must have known the words to at least a million tunes. But the one most requested by the man she knew as Cowboy was a late night benediction at the Y'all Come Back Saloon. In a voice soft and trembling, she'd sing a song to Cowboy as a smoky halo circled round her raven head. And all the fallen angels, the pinball playing rounders, stopped the games that they'd been playing for the loser's evening prayer. Faded love and faded memories, how they every night in the shadows, thinking back on Amarillo, he'd dream of better days and ask for faded love. Lifting high his glass in honor of the lady and her song, he paid his check and lonely walked that broken cowboy home. She played tambourine with a silver jingle, and she must have known the words to at least a million tunes. But the one most requested by the man she knew as Cowboy
was a late night benediction at the Y'all Comeback Saloon. She played tambourine with a silver jingle, and she must have known the words to at least a million too. But the one most requested by the man she knew as Cowboy was a late night benediction at the Y'all Comeback Saloon. Silver jingle, and she must have known the words to at least a million too. But the one most requested by the man she knew as Cowboy was a late night benediction at the Y'all
Close that suitcase you've been packing. Just sit down and talk to me while. I know you tried to tell me what was lacking, but I guess I must have missed it by mine. Well, this time, girl, I swear to you I'll listen. Help me understand where I went wrong. It's hard to find myself in this position. Scared that I'll go crazy once you're gone. Help me hold on to what we had. Once our love was strong, it can be again. Said it takes two to make love last. You were right all along, so help me hold on. What have I got to do to make it better? What have I got to do to make you see that even though I promised you forever, I never knew how hard that would be. I realize I took your love for granted, but I've learned that love worth having don't come free. I'll pay any price it takes to keep you satisfied and staying here with me. Help me hold on to what we had. Once our love was strong, it can be again. You said it takes two. Make love last. You were right all along, so help me hold on. Takes two to make love last. You
children, we answer this way.
Dear Lady of Fatima, we come on bended knee to beg your intercession for peace and unity. Dear Mary, won't you show us the right and shining way? We pledge our love and offer you a rosary each day.
There are millions and millions of steeples, counting the big and the small, and all of them point up to heaven, saying there's room for all. There's a gate to that heavenly kingdom, and the key to that gate is a prayer. And no one is questioned or humbled in spite of the cross they bear. Now why can't we follow that wisdom? And why should life hang by a thread? And why can't we all live like brothers, as the Lady of Fatima said? I do believe in miracles to help the lost on their way. It's the Lord's kindly way of saying, let us pray.
Dear Mary, won't you show us the right and shining way?
We pledge our love and offer you
a rosary.
I've already forgotten every woman but you. Oh, darling. darling, I'm gonna love you forever, forever and ever, amen. As long as old men sit and talk about the weather, as long as old women sit and talk about old men, if you wonder how long I'll be faithful, just listen to how this song ends. I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever, amen. I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever, amen.
Yeah, taking us to the top of the hour with Charlie Rich with The Most Beautiful Girl. After that, Barbara Mandrell with In Times Like These. Then Loretta Lynn with Blue Kentucky Girl.
Hey, did you happen to see the most beautiful girl in the world? And if you did, was she crying, crying? Hey, if you happen to see the most beautiful girl that walked out on me, tell her I'm sorry. Tell her I need my baby. Oh, won't you tell her that I love her? I woke up this morning, realized what I had done. I stood alone in the cold gray dawn and knew I'd lost my morning sun. I lost my head and I said some things. Now comes the heartaches that the morning brings. I know I'm wrong, but I couldn't see. I let my world slip away from me. So hey, did you happen to see the most beautiful girl in the world? And if you did, was she crying, crying? Hey, if you happen to see the most beautiful girl that walked out on me, tell her I'm sorry. Tell her I need my baby. Oh, won't you tell her that I love her? If you happen to see the most beautiful girl that walked out on me, tell her I'm sorry.
Front porch, rain is pouring down. News comes on the radio, there's trouble all around. That's the way it's always been, and the way it'll always be. I thank the good Lord I've got you in times like these. The rich keep getting richer, the poor barely get by. Farmer Johnson says it's either too wet. Jobs are scarce down at the factory. I thank the good Lord I've got you in times like these. In times like these, when it's easy to get down, you're my inspiration, you're my solid ground. In times like these, love will pull us through. Baby, I know I
magazines, but that don't change the fact that we got patches on our jeans. Everybody's needing money, even the preacher's preaching on TV. I thank the good Lord I've got you in times like these. It's easy to get down. You're my inspiration, you're my solid ground. In times like these, love will pull us through. Baby, I know I can depend on you. It cost you 45 cents for a nickel candy bar, and a dollar's worth of gas won't even start your car. Yeah, we got problems here in the land of the free. No place I'd rather be in times like these. I think the good Lord I got you in times like these. In times like these, baby, baby. In times like these. In times like these.
You left me for the bright lights of the town. A country boy set out to see the world. Remember when those city lights shined down? That big old moon shines on your Kentucky.
Many years ago, in days of childhood, I used to play till evening shadows come. Then winding down.